This is XFM Manchester. I'm Dave Haslam on this Monday evening, and in the studio, Tim and Jim and Larry from James. And that was Who Are You? Released today. Okay, going back to those early years, what were your influences back in 82?
All different, I think. I think the band was quite influenced by Fall, Joy Division. Paul, the initial guitar player, was very taken with Orange Juice. I came from Patti Smith, Iggy Pop, were my two major singing influences. Maybe The Doors, Velvets. I was very much American music based.
And all those bands of, I mean, those bands are what I suppose, you know, people call kind of left field or uncommercial bands. Is that how you saw yourselves in those early years?
They make music, and they make music that's lasted. That's the key. It's like, say, someone like the Velvet Underground, you know, even back then, it was like they were hardly known. You know, it was only musicians and fanatics knew of the Velvet Underground. But you knew that one day things would catch up with them, and they did. And Iggy Pop, you know, I saw Iggy Pop when I was 16 and on the Lust for Life tour. And you knew The Passenger would become this kind of student classic. It just had it written all over it. And the whole point for us was to make music that was respected, that would last. And the songs were worked on with a lot of love and a lot of time with that intention that they would last and still sound alive in 20, 30 years' time. You can't guarantee it, but you know the difference. You know the difference. It's easy to go for the shortcuts and to make music that is immediately catchy. That's not a problem. It's how do you make something that is kind of instant but at the same time has hidden depths.
So do you think that changed in your career as your career progressed? You know, did you get to a point where you were actually thinking, is anyone going to buy this? And other factors started to come into play.
We did. Not other factors came into play. Like, we recorded Gold Mother for Rough Trade for Jeff Travers. Jeff Travers, you know, highly respected industry man. I mean, he's just been the most amazing musical man in the history of probably British music. His ears are fantastic. But I remember him hearing the album, setting a budget for how much they were going to advertise, and saying to me, Tim, you have to realize you're never going to sell more than 20,000 copies. That's James. You're never going to sell more than 20,000 copies. And we said, well, Jeff, we don't believe that. Can we buy the record back off you, please? And we bought it back off him, sold it to Mercury, and sold hundreds of thousands of copies. We didn't have to change a note. It was like the music was there, but it needed to get out. It needed its time. It's all about timing. I also think in our first 7 years, we were four-piece, and our songs were quite skeletal. And once we brought in the other guys, we could flesh out the stuff a bit more. And that wasn't our intention, to make it easier for people to understand, but I think it made it easier for people to read our music.
Mm. And you began working with Brian Eno in the 1990s on the Laid album. What did he bring to that music that, I mean, it did take it on another level, and I know, you know, Brian Eno was somebody that you'd wanted to work with before.
We ended up working with Brian for about 10 years, actually.
I mean, we'd wanted to work with Brian for years, and we'd asked him on every album.
Stutter,
yeah,
first album.
I mean, it's just when you look at the stuff he's done, like all your favourite artists, the best albums are produced by Brian Eno. I mean, it was just one of those. I mean, we sent him a demo, didn't we? And, well, you did, I think, personally.
Yeah.
Sent him a demo, and he was listening to it on holiday, wasn't it? It was Sometimes, the demo to Sometimes that won him over. He just thought it was amazing.
That was the song that captured Brian Eno. And we hadn't finished it. I hadn't done a lyric for the chorus. It was quite a rough, spindly thing.
Mm.
And we kept it back from him when we recorded it. Wouldn't play it to him. And finally, we recorded it in this. And he was sitting in the centre, and it was like a big control room, and the band were all set up around him. And I remember watching him as we played it, and I could see him. He was walking around. He was being hit, and he was waiting for the chorus to hear what on earth I was going to sing, what the band were going to play. And when we played the chorus, he kind of slumped down into a chair, and we finished the song. And I wasn't quite sure if he hadn't liked it, you know. And he sat there, and we said, well, how was that, Brian? And he said, that was one of the highlights of my musical life. And that was the biggest compliment anyone has ever paid us, coming from him.
Okay, well, let's hear what it Sometimes ended up like after Brian Eno produced it. This is the very brilliant Sometimes by James, produced by Brian Eno on XFM Manchester.